You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 4 podcast.
And we are live in Tuscaloosa. It's been a spectacular day. Last hour, we went back-to-back with Nate Oates and Roy Jones Jr. I think probably two of the better interviews we've had on the road in a long time, back to back. We are here for the final hour of the program, and we are talking to Aaron Suttles from The Athletic. And Aaron, great to have you on. Thanks so much for being here. We've been here all day, really haven't talked about what we're here for, and that's to talk about Alabama's game against Arkansas. Good afternoon, and when we talked to you last, there were certainly some concerns about this football team. We're now closing in on the end of the season. Where is this team right now?
Well, it's a good segue, Paul, because you said you just had Nate Oates on. I've had several people during Alabama football games message me on Twitter and say they couldn't wait for college basketball season to start. They're really excited about the basketball. Paul, you covered Alabama before. Have you ever heard anybody during football season more excited for basketball season? I think that speaks to, one, what Nate Oates is doing with the basketball team, but two, sort of the season Alabama's had, which is your question. It's just been up and down, really inconsistent, really un-Nick Saban-like. But having said that, they're still sitting at number two in the country with everything they want still in front of them.
And Aaron, I don't want to act like I don't understand what you said. I do. I feel like maybe I don't know the Alabama fan base like you do today, but I do have some understanding of them. And it's been I'm going to quote you from a second ago. It's been an un-Nick Saban-like season. They're excited about basketball, and they're still number two in the country, which tells us what about where we are, and what is it going to be if this thing does not correct itself in a couple of weeks?
I think it's a couple different things. One, we've heard Nick Saban say the last two or three weeks, he's talked about losing respect for winning. And mainly he's talking about his players when he says that, but I also think he's including the fans in that it's not as easy to win. And you know, he's made it look quite easy. And I think, you know, there was a time when a team would lose six first-round NFL draft picks and lose a lot of talented players, and you would account that into what you expected from them next season. Except Nick Saban came to Alabama, and for so many years, regardless of what they lost, they were right there year in and year out. And it's been a little different this year. I mean, they're still right there, although they're not the favorite in the SEC. So I think all of that, you know, sort of the human complacency factor that Alabama fans just expect to win, to expect it's their birthright to be in the college football playoff, they've lost a little respect for winning. And I think there's been some issues on this team. Leadership-wise, I think they're a little mentally weaker than other Nick Saban teams, which is why we've seen a different Nick Saban, you know, the last two months probably. He's been a little more focused in accentuating the positive rather than trying to stamp down expectations, which he's done in the past with some of his better teams.
And I want to ask you about that, Aaron, because it concerns fans. You know, they're so used to him being the normal Nick Saban. I understand he's being careful, but get beyond that. And it's not easy to get beyond that, but do the best you can in explaining his approach to dealing with whether it's a fragile team or whatever. It's certainly not what we're used to.
It's not. And, you know, what makes a good coach is their adaptability. You know, even though coaches have systems on the field for their players, the best coaches adapt their system to what their players can do. And I think that adaptability applies to the mental state of this year's team. It's void of a lot of leadership. It's a team that's had two wide receivers pout on social media, threatening to quit. It's a team that still makes a lot of penalties. It's not really all that disciplined. And, you know, still, Nick Saban said on his coach's radio show last night, still having communication issues in going into the 11th week of the season. So in a lot of ways, this is just not a typical Nick Saban team. You expect Nick Saban, and you say Nick Saban's name, and you expect toughness. You expect discipline, and you expect to own the line of scrimmage. And I think all of those factors could be questioned with this year's team this year.
Talking to Aaron Suttles from The Athletic. Aaron, let's look at these next 3 weeks. Tomorrow against Arkansas, Auburn, and then Georgia. You can manufacture a tough game wherever you want, and usually you'll be wrong with Alabama. Although this year you may have been right, although I don't remember anybody talking about Florida, a couple of people, but not many, thinking that game would go down to the final couple of seconds. Tennessee was a struggle. LSU was a nightmare on Elm Street. What about tomorrow?
I think it's a difficult matchup, and I think Nick Saban has a lot of respect for what the Arkansas Razorbacks do on defense, the way that they played them last year. I mean, if you go back and look at last year's game, the score got out of hand, but it was one of Mac Jones's lower outputs of the season. It was certainly Heisman Trophy winner Devontae Smith's lowest output of the season. So I think they're worried, especially with this offensive line, Paul, and I'm curious about that too, because I think there could be some change, because we've seen Damian George now out at right tackle for a couple of games, and Nick Saban said he's played pretty well. And what maybe prevented him from playing earlier in the season was that unknown, that Nick Saban didn't know how he would respond. But now that he was forced to respond due to injury, they say he's played pretty well. So I wonder if he keeps that job at right tackle when Darian Dalcourt comes back to center. So some changes on the offensive line, and then look at what Arkansas is in the way that Sam Pittman has built that team. It's toughness, and they play tough, and that's something that Alabama has to answer. And that's what Nick Saban called his team out last night on the radio, saying that we have to answer that toughness. And I think if they were to go out, Paul, and soundly defeat Arkansas, I think that's a good sign for this development of this team this late in the season.
And if not, if we see a reoccurrence of a couple weeks ago against LSU, what would that tell you?
That, you know, there's a saying in life, Paul, that if someone tells you who they are enough, eventually you believe them. And we got 10 games worth of data from Alabama, and we keep trying to spin forward what if this, what if that. Now, the offensive line changes could legitimately spark some stuff. But Alabama is who it is this week. And if they tell you again that they're just sort of this inconsistent week-to-week, quarter-to-quarter football team, it's time for us to believe them.
Let me ask you about the coaching staff, Aaron. You have the Pete Golding story. We're in Chapter 9 of that. The fans don't like him, whether the statistics support that or not. But the one I'm really curious about is Bill O'Brien, coming in with big credentials, but I hear grumbling about him too. You're on ground zero. What do you see?
Yeah, the last couple of weeks, there's been more grumbling about Bill O'Brien, believe it or not, than about Pete Golding. Because you're right, Pete Golding's defense ranks pretty well, fifth in the nation, fourth against the run in the nation. It's more been Bill O'Brien, and you know there have been some times of uncomfortability. I think you go back and you look at the Texas A&M game where Alabama was inside the five, and they threw it three straight times, and then Nick Saban the next week comes out and says he didn't publicly question O'Brien, but about as good as he could have questioned him publicly when he said, I don't think we challenged Texas A&M running the ball in the red zone. And that was, I mean, basically, I don't want to call it a shot, but he was basically saying, I don't think we did the right thing there. So there's been some of that, and now we're starting to hear Bill O'Brien's name attached to different coaching openings. So, you know, I would not be surprised at the end of the day if it's another heavy staff turnover year for Alabama.
I mean, there was a lot made out of two NFL assistants, O'Brien and Marrone, and quite frankly, lately I hear more criticism of those two from fans, and I'm not saying it's random. I can see the same thing they are than anything else.
And some of it's fair. Like in life, you know, some of us aren't gifted with the gift of getting beyond perception. And the perception is that it's Bill O'Brien's fault on the offense this year, when in actuality, the offense is pretty good. And then you look, you know, what he's produced with a first-year starter in Bryce Young, averaging over 300 yards passing a game, 33 touchdowns, 3 interceptions, without a great offensive line, and without all that talent at wide receiver, and, you know, your potential first-round tight end, Jahlil Billingsley, has disappeared for games at a time this year. So given all of that and all that they've lost in the running back, the depletion that they've had, you know, it's not as bad as fans are making it out to be. But you and I know both, Paul, that just as with Pete Golden, the rankings don't really matter. So it becomes a point of perception, And Bill O'Brien's perception took a hit for his play calling at Texas A&M and for what the offense did against LSU in the second half. And even though the numbers don't support that he's not a good offensive coordinator or play caller, there's that perception that it's his fault. And it's really tough in life to get beyond perception.
Aaron, thank you for fitting us in. We'll talk to you very, very soon. Some great stuff from you. And Aaron Settle is joining us from The Athletic. We have a couple more guests to come. We are live in Tuscaloosa. Let's grab a call here. We have not had much opportunity for that. So how about Larry in Shelby, Alabama?
Hey, what's up, Paul Feinbaum? Roll Tide.
Larry, I don't see you out here with all the Tide fans. What's wrong?
Yeah, I wish I was there. I wish I could talk to that guy you just had on. I mean, he's saying the same thing we all know, Feinbaum. We got injuries. We're trying to make linebackers out of running backs and DBs. We put our tailback in the first game he's had to get back. Bam, he's out for the year. We've had injuries on the offensive line. That sounds just like what he was saying, wasn't it? I mean,
yeah, but you know something, Larry? We're pretty deep in the woods here because we're in Tuscaloosa. But if you're watching from Athens or Knoxville or Baton Rouge or Fayetteville, you don't really care because Alabama having problems is really none of their concern. It's interesting to hear Alabama sound like. What's that?
What about the dude you had on there, that Yankee Doodle about Oregon? You kidding me? We got pushed up to number two. Look at Oregon. Stanford beat them. Florida put 72 points on Stanford. I mean, I get tired of these pity parties for these damn Yankees. They need to grow a pair of stones and earn their way into the fold.
Larry, I just hope that the season ends well for you because this is what you sound like after one loss and being ranked second in the country. I don't know what you're going to sound like if Arkansas wins or Auburn wins or Georgia wins.
You should have put a verbal beat down on that Yankee. You're too soft on them Yankees. Too soft, don't even get it.
Larry, which Yankee are we talking about here?
All of them. Look at that smirk you got working for you. Easy on him. You got up there and you got to get this guy up there and you easy on him, a Yankee.
Larry, I have a question for you. It's 5:12 in the afternoon in Alabama. You're starting to border on making no sense. How many beers have you had today?
I had about seven, but that I'm just mad, man. Listen to you. I only had about seven. I'm all right.
Only seven beers?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm kicking.
Larry, I mean, Mark, can I quote you on that?
Smirk
just said something to me back from the studio. When you said you've only had, you ready for this, Larry?
Yeah, what did he say?
He said when you said you've only had seven beers, Mark said to me, "Are you slipping, old man?"
Oh man. Okay, I got. Oh man, it's on now, Smart. I'm gonna do that day so bad you ain't even Notre Dame never won another game. I'm telling you, man.
He said the old Yankee would have had 10 beers by now.
Yeah, he's just a Yankee doodle dandy. He just, you know what, Paul? Please, fire that guy and run him off. Fire him.
Fire Smirk? We can't fire
run
Smirk.
Run him off.
Because he's a Yankee?
Yeah, because he had to go out and get a real job. He wouldn't be up there getting them mooch money off you. He's mooch money.
Well, now you're starting to make some sense. I have to agree with you on that. Larry Smirk is telling me we are late for a break. I wonder why he's telling me that. We are coming back. We still have a long way. Well, we don't have that long to go. We're in Tuscaloosa. Big weekend.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-hour energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5hourenergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5hourenergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%. This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Welcome back, and we are live in Tuscaloosa. I forgot where we were for a second. I'm so cold. Austin Hannon is with us with the Crimson and White. He's the only student. He's the only student reporter I know that brought his own fan club here. That's pretty impressive, Austin. Thanks for it's good to see you again.
A couple of months ago,
we were down here talking to some students, and I know you cover a lot of things, including basketball. Nate Oates' team is about to take on Oakland, but let's talk about this weekend. This not so much the game, but just the vibe of this campus. We were just talking to Aaron Suttles a minute ago, and it feels different here. Even when we were up here, I think for the Ole Miss game, it was pre A&M. What's it like on this campus since Alabama is a little more vulnerable?
Well, it was different for the first time losing to an unranked team like that. And then after that, with the LSU game, I mean, that really set everybody off. I mean, an LSU team that's been struggling all year, even last year.
Fired his coach.
Came in here, and I mean, they were, 40 yards away from winning that football game.
Yeah.
Big stop by the defense, obviously, there. But, yeah, it's just been weird. Last week, New Mexico State came in. Crowd wasn't great, which is not what you want to see, but it was a comfortable win. I think that kind of brings the hope back together for the fans. And I mean, tomorrow will be a test for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not used to seeing Alabama fans wondering, and there's just been this confidence level under Nick Saban for 15 years. Mm-hmm. And you know, we have Arkansas tomorrow and Auburn, and then that Georgia game. I don't want to get too far ahead, Austin, but is this campus prepared to not be in the college football playoff?
I don't think they're there yet. I think just with the history we've had with Georgia and Kirby Smart, and obviously Jimbo Fisher tainted Saban's undefeated record against assistants, but there's this feel that there's a new dog in town, no pun intended with Georgia, but they're really solid. And I think it has a lot of people worried, but I think real Alabama fans know that this team at its best can absolutely beat Georgia and Atlanta.
Okay, that's the Alabama that I grew up with.
How about that for the confidence, right?
I like that. Saban may have you speaking to the team tomorrow at the rate you're going, Austin. Aaron Suttles said something else a minute ago. He said that, 6 weeks ago the criticism was of Pete Golden.
Right.
Now it's switched. The A&M game did Bill O'Brien no favors with some of his play selection. What are you hearing from campus people?
Same thing. I mean, I think it's both ends of the ball. Last year was more of a Pete Golding thing, whereas I think it's, like you said, switched to O'Brien now. That game was just weird. I mean, you had multiple opportunities at the goal line when we're trying to throw the ball. And I just that's something we've never seen from Alabama, especially with the talent you got on the offensive line. And we've got plenty enough guys to go in there and, block for Brian Robinson to get 1 yard. You got three plays to get it, and you try to throw the ball. You get stopped, and A&M won that game. And then, of course, the LSU game just couldn't get anything going. I mean, it was just scoring 20 points on a defense that really isn't as good as it should be with a lot of guys. I mean, they had, seven starters missing that game, too, I think, from the beginning of the season.
I want to ask you about that game because, I was stunned. I was watching it, and my wife said, Alabama looks horrible. I said, don't worry, they'll win by 30.
Right.
I mean,
they'll get it together, right?
Yeah, like and when it didn't happen, it was like, oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Maybe this team isn't so good.
If it wasn't for the defense and, I mean, specifically Will Anderson in that game, we wouldn't even be talking about the Georgia matchup. I mean, because that would have been over and dead and gone, if not for a couple big defensive stops there in the fourth quarter. So we got to stop Treylon Burks, Treylon Smith. They got talented players on Arkansas's team. And, they're physical. Of course, KJ Jefferson, 6'4", 230. I mean, that's the prototype quarterback, right, to beat Nick Saban's strong defense, you got to have a guy that can run the ball down your throat, and I think, you know, he has a chance to do that.
Let's talk a little bit about you and where you work. We had such a great time over the summer talking to student reporters. We had a friend of ours on from the Daily Beacon in Knoxville. I had a great opportunity to visit with the students, and you've
yeah.
had this conversation. It's a real passion of mine to hear how student reporters like you are treating it. So let's take us inside your newspaper office. Always special to be part of something like Alabama. What describe that experience for the last couple of years since you've been on that team?
Yeah, I think a lot of people around, you know, think when they think of student journalism, all that kind of stuff, it's more like, oh, they're not professionals, they don't do that and this and that, and they're not maybe as qualified, as credible as, you know, the professional people are. I think that's wrong. I think a lot of people do great work. I mean, it's not just about sports either. I mean, we got a lot of people doing great work at the CW for all kinds of things, and I think it just needs to be more taken more seriously, because I mean, for me, I do everything I write, everything I do is I act like it's my job, my real job for the whole, you know, for the future. So when you put something out there that you know is going to be published and you know is going to be read by people, and I mean, once it's out there, right? That's what they say about the internet. So I treat everything like I have to do it to my best. So like my future employer will see it. And I think that's what a lot of students do. And we should be, I think journalists in college should be taken a lot more seriously. I think you would agree with that. Did people treat you like that back when you were in college?
They did not treat us well. There was always this conflict, and I had our friends in Knoxville last week made it clear, because I joked with them about, you know, how editorially independent are you when you're at a place where the school pays for the electricity and they pay for, and there's always this battle, and I wonder in a place like this though, where there's so much history on this campus, not only from a football standpoint, but just from a student government standpoint, that is, it's an endless, it's a documentary that needs to be done. But where do you young people find the confidence to do what you're supposed to do? And that it's not to be muckrakers, it's to ask questions and seek the truth.
I think a lot of people in this business, when you're getting a degree like this, you have to be that kind of person. Like a go-getter, somebody that has confidence in yourself, because I think a lot of people, you know, judge journalists and stuff for, you know, taking the easy route, and covering sports is like, you know, easy and not the hardest job in the world, but there's a big confidence key, like a component to it, and I think for a lot of people that's kind of what keeps them going, is themselves, and they know that they're good at what they're doing and they're just as, you know, credible as the people that are around them professionally.
This sounds like a parental question, but I'm going to ask it. What's next for you when you finally wrap up your training here?
You know, that's always the question, right, from grandparents and stuff. I don't know. You know, I really love writing. I love what I've done here with the CW, but I think my true passion is being on television, you know, being on radio. I do a weekly show at the radio station here on campus, WVUA 90.7, once a week, talk sports. So, I mean, you're, I guess, same track you went down, right? I mean, writing and radio and all this stuff. And I think TV is where I really want to be. But, you know, if writing's where I end up, I'd be just as happy doing that.
I didn't have an opportunity like you. I covered a transition in coaches. I did have an opportunity like you at the beginning of my career, covering what I thought was the greatest coach in college football history. What's it like covering Nick Saban, who now is the greatest coach in college football history?
I think it's taken for granted by a lot of people, Nick Saban's, what he's done here. I think in and out every year, it's just kind of like Alabama's Alabama, right? And the students kind of have that mentality. And I think that's why you see sometimes the crowds are not full and, you know, people are shocked when we lose, right? It's just because there's been that consistent basis of Nick Saban's our coach. He's going to take us to the playoff every year. That people, you know, there's a sense of entitlement with students maybe. And, you know, it's crazy getting to cover him. I mean, the greatest coach to ever walk the sideline, I think, in any team sport ever. And, you know, I think we got a coach coming up soon in Nate Oates that could get to that.
Let me ask you about that as we close, because he was here earlier, and it is stunning to sit here and look at him. And you know, he mentioned, you know, having won a state championship, what, 9 years ago or something.
High school math teacher, 9 years.
Yeah.
It's just crazy.
Less than that. And you know, he had a team last year that, you know, that was capable of winning it all and made a great run. What do you see in him when you cover him? I know you're about to cover his game in a
minute. Right. it's just, it's a big difference. You know, growing up an Alabama fan, watching Alabama basketball, I've seen Anthony Grant come through here. I've seen Avery Johnson come through here. And there's always that excitement at the beginning of their career, right? You know, we're going to get this done. We're going to be a great team. We're going to recruit well. We're going to play this way. And it all kind of ended up being, not maybe not lies, but it just never worked out for those guys. And I think when Oates came here, a lot of people were thinking it's just going to be the same thing. You know, he's going to say, we're going to play fast. We're going to score a lot of points. We're going to be a great basketball team. Is that really true? And I think what makes him stand out is he's really done that. I mean, he's been here for 2 years. His first year, obviously, COVID happened. And I don't think we're going to make the tournament either way. But last year, a team that absolutely could have made the Final Four and, I mean, really could have won a national championship.
Austin Hannon from the Crimson and White. It's been great getting to know you. The best fan following of anyone the entire season. Congratulations, Austin. I hope your career has much success.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand-name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to Amazon.com/ESPN Pods. That's Amazon.com/ESPN Pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And welcome back. The final couple of segments of the program. We're live in Tuscaloosa, and as we do every Friday, we check in with Chris Doering, who is in studio. And Chris, good to have you on. And let's start here, because Alabama, I looked at the matchup a minute ago. It was so weird. I don't know about you, seeing Arkansas ranked and having a winning record. That's going to take some getting used to.
It is something we've had to get used to this season. I mean, it's been a season in Fayetteville that's far exceeded even my expectations. Obviously, a little up and down with the start they had in September with the two big wins over the Texas schools and then the fade during October. But they've gotten things back on track. I think the loss of Jalen Catalon was what really hurt them defensively. You saw them making uncharacteristic mistakes during that run in October where they lost a couple ball games, giving up big plays in the secondary, not communicating as well. Certainly the energy that Catalon brings on the field and the playmaking ability, but also just having those guys coordinated. So I think they've gotten back on track now, and I'm interested to see how they're able to do two things tomorrow against Alabama. Can they run the football? Alabama's defense has gotten better against the run over the course of the season. And can Arkansas create some pressure on Bryce Young? I mean, this is an offensive line that is not a typical Alabama offensive line. They've given up a lot of sacks this year. They're 10th in the conference when it comes to sacks allowed. Arkansas hasn't been tremendous at their ability to rush the opposing quarterbacks either, but I think that they go with a little more aggressive nature like LSU did 2 weeks ago, where they were able to rack up four sacks against Bryce Young. So that, I think they're going to want to play physical and try to hit Bryce Young and let him know they're going to be there for the full 60 minutes of that game tomorrow.
Talking to Chris Doering, and Chris, everyone can find a path, but what would be the best path for Arkansas? Could they possibly win this game?
I don't believe they win the game, Paul. I think that Alabama is starting to push for the end of the season. They seem to be getting better, and you look at Coach Saban this week, the way that he's been on his team about focus and preparation. it seems like he can sense the urgency that this team now needs to have. It's been a weird year for Coach Saban in terms of listening to some of the sound in the post game or on the Monday morning press conferences. He's coddled this team a little bit more. He's kind of brought them along, but now he's starting to have to ride them a little harder. And I think that this is the time that Alabama usually gets things going. Now, the thing that stands out to me, though, Paul, is how about this finish for Alabama? Arkansas and then Auburn in the Iron Bowl before going presumably to the SEC championship against Georgia. Meanwhile, Georgia gets a little bit of a break the next 2 weeks. So I'm interested to see not only how those teams were able to handle their respective games, but Georgia being beat up a little bit last week, can they get some recovery for guys like Jordan Davis and Nolan Smith and Devontae Wyatt? And can Alabama stay healthy in two games against SEC West opponents?
Yeah, that is an unusual path to the finish, because normally you get, not last year, of course, but normally you get that cupcake and yeah. Then the Auburn game. Let's move to a couple of the really interesting games tomorrow. The slate is light, but there are some tough matchups to figure out, starting with Auburn in South Carolina, two teams who really still stung by what happened last week.
Yeah, incredibly inconsistent, right? I really expected that South Carolina would go out to Como, that they'd be able to run the football like they did against Florida, that they'd be able to penetrate, stop the run. It was quite the opposite. Tyler Beatty, again, had a big outing, over 200 yards rushing against them. They weren't able to run the football at all against the worst rush defense in the entire conference. So they've got their work cut out for them, but I also think Auburn's a difficult team to figure out as well. That big 28-3 letdown in the second half against Mississippi State. You look at having to replace your quarterback and leader. I want to see what they do offensively. What does Mike Bobo do with T.J. Finley? Is it pretty much the same game plan that they've used with Bo Nix? Or do they try to change things up a little bit? I know, Paul, the biggest thing that Auburn has to do, whether it's Bo Nix or whether it's T.J. Finley, is run the football. So certainly with Bo being out, they're going to have to do that even more. I'm interested to see how much T.J. Finley, who's not as good of an athlete, I think, as Bo Nix is, how much they use him in that run game, because Bo was a big part of what they were able to do on the ground.
Chris, which brings me to the final question. It's where you live and where you played, and it remains the topic du jour. What's going on with Florida, and what's going to happen tomorrow?
Well, they've certainly been trying to put on a brave face this week, haven't they? I mean, it's really been weird. Some of the press conferences we've seen about, you know, all the positivity that they're having and staying focused. It didn't look like a focused defense to me on Saturday. Now, Coach Mullen will tell you about the offense, and Emory Jones has really been the bright spot the last couple weeks. I completely agree with him on that. But defensively, you know, a lot of breakdowns last week, a lot of missed tackles. They did get back on track in the second half. But you're supposed to dominate a team like Samford. This is a dangerous game. Going out to Como, I think the weather will be favorable, much better than it probably could have been for the Florida boys traveling to the Northwest. But I do think that this is a game that could be disastrous for Florida. If they don't find a way to win this game, all hell will break loose. And I don't know where Scott Strickland goes from there.
Let me ask you to. I know you're speculating, but you know the final two games, Missouri and Florida State. You said what you said, but what do you mean? All hell will break loose.
Well, I mean, there's already a ton of negativity. I mean, that's one of the things that drives me crazy, Paul, about this conference and specifically Florida's fan base, is the negativity, how quickly things go downhill and the panic button gets pushed. That was one of the reasons why Jeremy Foley ultimately had to let Will Muschamp go, was the amount of negativity, the fractured fan base. There was really no recovery from that, and it ultimately cost Will Muschamp his job, even though I don't think that Jeremy Foley wanted to do that. So I'm interested to see, if Florida were to lose here, can that negativity be held at bay long enough to be able to allow Coach Mullen to get another season? Right now, there's a lot of people calling for his job. I don't think that's the best thing to do, given the pool of candidates that's available and given the number of big hitters that are fishing in that pool. But I do think right now there's an overwhelming amount of negativity that if Florida can't find a way to create a little bit of positive momentum heading into the offseason, if they can't find some direction offensively, if they can't find a leader at the quarterback position, that it very well may be something that Scott Strickland feels like he can't overcome at this point.
Would you say one game is more important than the other, or is it just really what Florida looks like in these last two games?
It's this game, right? This is the one, at least, that gives you a chance to get to next week. So I think that clearly this is a game that Florida should win. But ironically, you know, Florida has a chance to, if they lose this football game, go winless on the road in the SEC for the first time since 1979. So we're talking about historically bad events in terms of this week with if they do lose the football game and not getting a road win in the conference. And last week, giving up 42 points in the first half to an FCS team, mind you, that was the most points surrendered by a Florida defense in a half in the history of that program. So these are not good milestones that are being set right now.
Well, a lot to digest there as we wind up. Chris, thanks for your honesty, and it's always appreciated, especially when it cuts close, as Florida does to you.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Well, we made it to the end of the week. Appreciate you being a part of the show. We will see you on Monday.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network, beginning at 3 Eastern.